You're listening to Ryan Anderson's Model Railcast Show with your hosts, Craig Bisgeier and Tim Harrison. We're bringing you the latest news, reviews, and interviews on the hobby of model railroading. The Model Railcast Show, keeping you on the right track.
All right, model railcasters. As I record on my iPhone because I can't find my microphone, it has been a very, very long time. Very long. Lots of stuff has happened. You can hear our wind chimes outside. And lots of stuff has gone down. Life has gotten a whole lot crazier. We've moved. We've had some family medical issues that came up. But the Model Railcast Show isn't going anywhere. Now, for a while, it literally wasn't going anywhere. But I have spoken with Craig. He is still very much interested in continuing the Model Railcast Show, and so am I. Enough so that I just recently renewed the domain name and the website just to make sure we can keep Ryan Anderson's vision going. So this is going to be a show that I recorded with Larry Edgering, and it was last year. So I'm going to go ahead and get this going, and I'm going to be talking with Craig Bisgeier soon so that we can get an update from him. Probably that's what we'll do in the next show. And then I also have a show that I recorded last year with Bernie Kempinski that will be uploading soon, too. So I thank you for your patience in all these trying times that my family's been through. We have seen the light at the end of the tunnel. It was a train a couple times, but now it looks kind of just like a light. And with that, we will go into the show that we recorded now almost a year ago.
I am here.
All right. Model Railcasters, as I pour my Belvaney Doublewood 17-year-age scotch, we are about to start show 224.
Yay.
I mention that because I know that you, my sweet guest, are also a scotch aficionado.
Yes.
And, well, there we are. But it showed.
Unfortunately, tonight's scotch is Maxwell House.
It happens. It happens. But it's Model Railcast Show 224. Craig couldn't be with us. He is on the road. He is just beat. But if everything works well, he'll be joining us next week when we record with Bernie Kempinski talking up the MARPM. But in the meantime, I've got a guy who's been associated with the Model Railcast Show for a long time, and you've heard him on other podcasts as well, Modeler's Life. Have you popped on Model Rail Radio, Uncle Larry?
Oh, many times.
Yeah, yeah. So there, he's on that, and so he's out there. We love him. And Lawrence, if I'm not mistaken, your first stint on the show was with Ryan Anderson. You go back that far.
Yeah, it was, I think, 53, mm-hmm. show 53, and in that range.
Yep, very good. So we're gonna grab some updates, but the main point of tonight's show, I've had a few listeners write in, call in, whatever, who really want to get the most out of their DC layouts, and we'll go into why they do. But in the meantime, an update is from me is sadly the Pennsylvania Reading Seashore Lines Millville branch is no more in my basement because we have finished our move. The layout got torn down, and so now I'm going back to the drawing board a little bit because I have a bit of a different room to set up the layout in. I'm still going to model the same area because it's near and dear to me, and actually it's if you look on a map, all we did when we moved was move 12 miles south down the same railroad line. The same railroad line runs about the same distance away from our new house as it did the old house. So it's still my local backyard railroad, Uncle Larry. How about that?
I love it.
Yeah.
And it's the railroad itself is still active. Once you get further south than Woodbury, the trains are running twice a day. If you're in Woodbury, then you're going to hear about anywhere from 6 to 8 trains a day. And I don't know what it is, Lawrence, but I love old railroaders to death, but there's always a sense of doom and gloom, and so I'm always hearing about the dwindling number of trains on that line, and all I'm hearing is more and more horns. So I'm not sure what the disparity is there, but in spite of everything ending, they seem to be doing just fine.
In other words, the word on their premature demise may be just out of order.
Yes, exactly. Well, there was much, justified sadness. They tore down an old power plant near the Delaware Memorial Bridge, Atlantic City Electric, which had gotten coal from the trains for years and years and years. While it's sad to see that go, in the meantime, they've opened about 2 new asphalt plants, which require about 60 cars a day, if I'm not mistaken. And also, now they're going to be reopening on that same line an ammunition plant. DuPont's opening an ammunition plant, so that's going to require even more service. So the trains are dying, but somehow they're increasing in number, so we'll just have to let that go. So, anyhow.
Anywho.
Yes, so before we get to the part of the show, what has happened with your layout since the last time we talked to you?
Oh, my gosh. honestly, it went through a period of neglect. Some of you may know and some may not, but I'm in the business of model railroad repairs in design and building, and I'm doing a whole bunch of things with that. So I currently have about 7 regular customers I visit at least twice a month. And I'm busy 40-plus hours a week fixing their model railroads, which leaves not a lot of time to do my own. But I do run my layout all the time, because if I do a decoder install, I always test them for a couple hours. And so, to be truthful, about a week ago, I revisited an expansion that I was thinking about on my layout to add a caboose track and maybe a little bit, a few more areas to store cars also.
Nice.
Maybe 10, 12 cars. So,
I'm sorry, what was the name of that railroad again? Can you give that to us again?
Sure, it's the WDCNP, which is, we don't care if it's not prototype.
Right. I remember some very interesting sounding industries off of that railroad. Could you rattle off a few of those?
Yeah, the Schnauzes Brothers Meatpacking and Industrial Refuse Facility. We have the Gamari Ammunition Plant. We put the in your gun. We have Guido's Bodacious Bovines, and excuse me, Guido's Gargantuan Goats, and Bubba's Bodacious Bovines. There we go. There's a couple more. We have the Schlurky plant, which is it's a schnossage jerky. Schnossage is the meat that cooks itself. So, there's more.
And that's to remind us, sometimes I feel like if we're going to do this thing, if we're going to do this model railroad thing, we've got to get everything prototype. And we just don't. And sadly, some of us get so hung up on that, we forget that model railroading should be fun. And if you're not having fun, then I don't know why you're doing it.
The Schlurky plant, for instance, is probably one of the finest buildings that I've ever seen built. My friend Richard did the building. And the downstairs is fully scenic, even though you can't see about 60% of it. But if you could take a little mini camera in there, everything is perfect. And he scratch-built a machine to cut up these large, I guess they would be prototypically 10-foot wide pieces of Schlurky into manageable sizes. I mean, it's incredible modeling.
That's awesome.
You know, when you can have fun, and as part of the operation, you have to switch in the Bubba's bottled water and the bovines and all of that. You know, they're all on the switch lists. So they're real industries as far as my layout goes. And, so there's a little bit for everybody in there.
That's fantastic. And what railroad names are you running through there?
Well, actually, the Schnossage brothers have two 280s. So they're the SBE Express.
Okay.
And they interchange with the New York Central just because I'm a New York Central fan.
Nothing wrong with that. Ah, beautiful. All right, great. Well, Model Railcasters, we are going to take a brief pause and be right back.
Hot start!
All right, well, in that case, let's get right to it. We are so happy to have you with us again. And what I wanted to talk tonight to you about tonight was getting the most out of DC wiring and layouts. And my premise was, and I've been working on this for a while, there's a lot of model railroads and model railroaders out there that still have DC power, and for various reasons. I mean, one of the easiest ones I can think of, reasons why they do, but not necessarily what I think is most representative, is that it's just kind of a tradition thing. They're not going to give it up. I don't think that represents the majority of it, but it may for all I know. If I can start with one, for the layperson, can you please just give us a quick description of each power option that we have in model railroading?
Oh, boy, that may take a few minutes. we could go... Well, let's start like with the O and the G gauge things, okay? G and O both will operate off just regular AC like a Lionel transformer. Mm-hmm. There's the Mike's train house option, which is DCS. Lionel trains has they've got like three of them. They've got conventional, this one and that one, and they all play well together. And in HO rail and Z, we primarily have, yes, in some parts of Europe, they use AC, similar to what Lionel trains and all them do. But the majority is a straight DC. You have DCC. Mike's Trainhouse has DCS. And now there's two or three new versions of DCC out that all operate off the same premise, but they all have different features and functionality. So
right.
That kind of covers it.
Okay, cool. Right, good. Now, my encounter with most of the people who are still using DCC is that either they're just unfamiliar with what digital command control can do for you, or it could be a layout that's just progressed so far that the person doesn't think switching is practical, but it seems like a lot. I can think of one of my PRSL mentors in particular, Rick Belisatis, who's got a great blog, I think it's PRSL Blogspot. For him, Uncle Larry, he's just got so many engines and N scale on top of that, that really for him to switch over, there's no way he could do it right now. And I feel like he's not the only one. There's lots of people that it would almost be an absurd financial decision to switch over because they might have so many locomotives. But is that your experience as well as for people who just haven't made the switch yet or can't make the switch?
Yeah, yes. And I have a dear friend here in town, Jeff Barker, who had in excess of 300 locomotives and had two that were DCC. Well, his brother gave him an NCE system, a little power cab, and so he wired it up via toggle switches because he had block control on his layout, you know?
Right.
And so he wired it up, you know, I showed him how to interface in between and hook it up. And he had, you know, all these locomotives. Well, now he found out that, you know, 20% of them were plug and play. So he bought a bunch of inexpensive decoders. And he started converting them. So now his entire layout is actually just running DCC. Mm-hmm. And he's converting his more popular engines, you know, and it's been a 2-year process. And he's probably about a third of the way done, mm-hmm. you know. So,
right.
But then there is the group, and you know what? I understand it completely. they're actually overwhelmed by it.
And right.
That, you know, they understand a direction switch and they understand a knob and they're happy with that.
Right.
And if they're happy and they're having fun model railroading, I'm not going to judge them for running DC, because
right.
it can be as reliable as anything, you know?
Right. Right.
Okay. So then, really, in keeping with the theme, getting the most out of a DC layout, then, for these guys who are just going to stay in DC, for whatever the reason may be, where's a good foundation to start? I mean, what are some good principles to keep in mind?
It's always, you know, in my case, it's always about the details in doing your electrical connections, whether they're soldered or they're screwed onto terminals or whatever. It's following good, solid processes to make sure that you have a good connection that can't get tarnished or get, you know, any kind of problem with down the line, you know. So, for instance, a big classic thing is everyone puts flux on their solder joints, they solder the wires, and they move on, okay, to the next one. There's an integral step that has to be done. You must get some 50-50 rubbing alcohol, at the very least. I prefer 70 or 91, and you clean that joint when you're done. The flux, even the non-corrosive water-based and traditional rosin core fluxes, can actually deteriorate over a time, and your connections can get bad. So if you clean that flux off, because it always rises to the surface, then you eliminate that. That's one of the big things, is just follow good protocols. If you've got, you know, if you've got a main bus, make sure that it's, I'm not saying the NMRA standards are the end all and be all, but they're a good start point.
Right.
If you're running more modern locomotives, I think that their bus wires are a little bit oversized, uh-huh. just to be honest. Current draw is not what it was 25 years ago. You don't have a 4-amp Athearn engine anymore.
Right.
Most of them are a tenth of an amp. So, but if you follow those guidelines, and even I think they've even upgraded them somewhat to the feeder size being dropped down to 22, et cetera. If you just follow that, you'll have reliable operation.
Right. That's great. So here's a thing I've been curious about, and I know you've seen a lot of layouts in a varying size. So what I'm curious, and maybe this question is a little vague, and that's kind of how I roll, but does anything change?
I speak vague.
Of course, there we go. Does anything change, though, going from a small layout to a mid-size or a large layout?
Yes, dramatic changes. The difference in small to mid is the beginning of mid to large. A small layout, just a couple of loops, you know, you can get by with, you know, say a 4x8, okay, in HO, and a couple of loops with maybe a crossover. You can get by with two power packs and a few bits of isolation and have some toggle switches that can toggle between the two power packs for the two rails, you know,
mm-hmm.
To create a block like that. That's very simple to do, and there's probably 100 YouTube videos out there that'll show you how to do it wrong. You know, but there's probably 100 out there that'll show you how to do it right too, in all fairness.
Right.
So if it doesn't make sense, don't do it. That's my caveat for the night on this. Okay.
Right.
I won't say any more negative. But when you go from a small to a medium, you might have, say, 25 sidings, and you may have a switcher that works one area, and you might have a mainline train that goes through there. Well, you have to have some kind of a cab control or a block control so that the individual throttle can be used for that locomotive. Additionally, you might have to turn off the power to a siding so you can park that engine.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, that frees up that other power pack to maybe run another section or something. So that bit of wiring gets a little more complicated. Now, a large layout, now you're talking 5-7 blocks, and you have to have a pair of wires for each of those that goes to a switch that switches it, you know, each section of track to whatever throttle's there. So you can imagine that you could go through a mile and a half of bus wire in no time at all on a large layout. And I think that there's plenty of guys out there that are shaking their heads saying, oh, yeah, I did that. And I ripped it all out when I went to DC.
Right, right.
All right. So what are then some... We've spoken of some of these things before. What are some commonly overlooked areas when it comes to DC wiring?
You know, a lot of it is just inadequate bus wires. They'll have a piece of 20-gauge wire laying around, and they'll run it 90 feet and wonder why the voltage drops at the other end.
Right.
I have been guilty on my own layout. There was one spot I completely ripped out everything I did and redid it because I had some smaller wire. I put it in, and all of a sudden, you know, it was not as reliable. The other thing that a lot of folks miss is, and it's common on DCC also, is the feeders in the right locations. When you're coming out of a turnout period, there should be, on every turnout, there should be four wires, no matter how you do it, okay? You have your two outside rails should have wires, okay? And you have a gapped frog. At the end of the gaps of those frogs, you should have the appropriate feeders for those next two rails. And the reason is you're not relying on something else feeding power back to it, such as on an Atlas switch or a Pico,
right,
that DCC or DC friendly, if you will. You know, everybody says, oh, yeah, I don't need to worry about those two because it gets the power from the throw. No.
Right.
No, it doesn't work. And the reason is you get a little ballast in there, you get anything in there, you've lost your contact. If you put the buses on the other sides there, then it can feed back through those rails back in. It's never going to cause a short. It's only going to cause better conductivity.
Right.
So those are some common things.
And if I may, off script, we're talking about trans scale principles here, right? This is what you're saying is HOS scale or two rail O.
Yep. I'm even on three rail O. The center rail, when you come out of a turnout, should always have a good solid conductor on it. You know, it's just because they pick up a lot of the same ways. So.
Yeah, and you know, I never want to leave out our three rail buddies who are vital part of the hobby too. I mean, how much changes for if you have a three rail layout, or do a lot of the principles stay the same?
They're a little different, mm-hmm. but the basic principles stay the same.
Right.
You got a new section of track. If you want super reliable, it should have a feeder.
Right.
Or it should be soldered to the next one. And I know there are guys out there that say, never solder your flex track. Guess what? I work on layouts all the time that have soldered flex track, and they don't have any problems at all.
Right.
So you can throw that one out the window if you want. You can use it however you want to do it. If you drop a feeder on each section of track,
right,
it's reliable.
Right, right.
And I'll tell on me. Our club has a 15 by 50 dual layer layout with two helixes in it. Okay?
Okay.
I'm the electrical guy, and we have another guy named Dave Hank, who also is he's a former Navy ET chief, and he and I, you know, have soldered more wires than most people will ever see, you know. And when they wanted to get the upper level going, Dave got a bunch of track down, and we got the main lines done. I hooked up six feeders. I have 140 more to go, but we can run trains.
Right.
Because we have good soldered rail with good procedures, and we're in a warehouse. We're in a warehouse in Florida. So we can go from 25 degrees to 75 degrees in one afternoon.
Wow, right.
And guess what? We don't have any buckling track. We don't have any problems because we're using proper adhesives. We allowed rooms where we needed to for expansion, et cetera. But because we did such a good job soldering that rail, we literally have run trains 80 feet on just the rail.
Wow.
From the nearest feeder.
That says a lot.
Yeah. Now, is that our long-term goal? No. In fact, within the next few weeks, most of those feeders will be dropped. You know, it's just a matter of time when guys aren't running trains. Because right now, we can run trains and they're happy.
Right. Right.
great.
I mean, we have a five track car shed for the station we're putting in. So, I mean, it's five tracks wide that will have passengers cars on, with light probably.
Man.
Trust me, that's going to take some serious current handling.
Well, and most definitely.
With this next question, question six, I just realized, you can also include in here that, you know, using technology like the Arduinos and stuff like that in this answer. It's up to you, or we can just say that for 10. But my next question is really talking about how deep can you go, you know, when we talk about fine-tuning our DC layout. And I guess I'm looking for the listeners for general steps and like, enhancing products that they can really get into.
Yeah, typically the older DC layouts are probably using twin coil switch machines to throw the turnouts. I mean, one of the quick steps in there is to just put some tortoises in. They're simple wire to a DC bus, and just with a double pull, double throw switch and a crossover. I mean, and there's 100 articles out there. So that's one of the things. The other thing you could add is LED lighting. That's, for instance, let's say you have a small building next to your track, and you want it to be on and off. Your DC layout is already prepared. You've got DC voltage there. You could just wire in an LED with a resistor and have it come on as the track power comes on. I mean, it just, you know, little things like that. The big thing is a lot of the guys are still using traditional MRC power packs, just the old reliable MRCs. Well, there are out there, and our club had one several years ago. We had two of them, actually. We had these 10-amp beautiful throttles that actually had handheld remotes you could unplug and move to another location and run your train with. And those things worked great. And now they're out there because everybody's got DCC. You probably buy the things for $30.
Right.
So don't lock yourself into, you know, the standard control when you got to be there. You know, if you're going to switch an area around there, do that. In fact, I'm working on a layout down in Port Orange, Florida right now that the gentleman's father built this layout 20 years ago. It's got Atlas brass track, believe it or not. And it's in a climate-controlled environment. He keeps his track clean. It runs reliably. But the one thing he has is that the layout's 13 feet long, and he's got a single MRC Tech 2 transformer right there in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a switching area. So I showed him one of these throttles, and he's going to buy one. He's going to find it on eBay or, you know, somewhere show. We have a show tomorrow I'm going to. And he'll find one there, and I'll hook it up for him, and I'll put in a couple of extra plugs on the other side so he can just carry his little handheld around and run his trains.
That's
an enhancement, you know. And it's old school for a lot of guys, but somebody with a DC layout may just have three or four Tech 2s.
Right.
Why not upgrade? Now's the time. It's cheap.
Right.
You know?
All right. So what I want to know, this is question seven. So in Lawrence Eggering steps, and am I saying that right? Is it Lawrence? Sorry.
No, it's Eggering. Yeah. My name is Lawrence.
Yeah. But I could never remember.
Call me Weird Uncle Larry, but that's reserved. Well, your kids are allowed to call me that.
There we go.
Yeah.
So when you step into a room with a DC layout, what are you looking for?
Couple of quick things. Looking to see what kind of locomotives are on the layout. Reason is, if I see a lot of the old Atherns, you know, that drew 3 and 4 amps, or some brass locomotives with giant can motors in them, I'm going to look at for that because I know that the current draw is going to be excessive. Then I'm going to look at the controller and see what kind of controller it has. If it's an MRC Tech 2, they're only good for about 3.5 amps, and you'll get shutdowns and, you know, circuit breaker trips and all this. So that's one of the things I look for. The other thing I look for is just the neatness of the wiring going to the controller.
Right.
You know, is it got a bus type structure? Is it, you know, is there terminal lugs on, or have we just got some stranded wire that's wrapped around a screw and sort of tightened down? You know, I mean, these are not uncommon things, and I had layouts I built 25, 30 years ago that had some of that, you know.
I'm a little more educated now, so I think I try to help people. I'm not there to judge and say, oh my God, look what you did. I'm just trying to make my company motto is simple. Okay. It is, I'm trying to make your railroad the best it can be. Right. Okay. I don't want to rebuild everybody's railroad. If they want me to redesign it, I'm happy to do that. But if they just want it fixed and running more reliably, I'm happy to do that. I'm happy that people are playing with trains like me, you know. So that's some of the things I look at. I look at the switch machines to see what kind they are. Then I look to see if that switch machine being run off that Tech 2 power pack that's trying to run the DC also. You flip that twin coil switch machine, it's going to grab 2 to 3 amps. And guess what happens to your trains? They stop for a second. Right. And if you have a DCC locomotive running on DC, those power drops can make it do some pretty crazy stuff. So those are some of the things I look for. You know, I look for the quality of the soldering of the bus feeders and things like that, you know. So,
right. Gotcha.
And oftentimes I get called in for consultations. They'll just say, hey, you know, can you come and show me what to do to make it better?
Right.
And, you know what, if you want to do your own work, I'm happy for you because I do my own work.
Right.
So.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, good. So then, and I think this kind of follows up with what you just said. Can you talk about some of the improvements that you have made to layouts that you worked on? And I know you've made a ton, but maybe you can think of a few to highlight.
Yeah, the layout in Port Orange. None of the brass track was soldered together. It was only rail joiners. And now, his dad did feeders every 3 feet, which was following NMRA standards. But the problem is, there's 3 pieces of track in that 3 feet. And so one thing I did is I fluxed and soldered everything. I showed him how to clean his track and how to put I use a product that I get at Home Depot. It's called CRC 2-26. It's in the electrical section.
Oh, yes, you know. There we go. Yes, and you're in good company because I know that Dave Ramos of the New York Harbor Railroad has hawked that product a lot, and so has Craig Biscayer. So, yeah.
Yeah, it works real well. And, you know, the nice thing about it is if you don't have a heavy finger, you can actually control the flow to get it where it's like an eyedropper. That's a really good can, you know. So that, you know, the other thing you can do is just decan it into a plastic cup and you know, use an eyedropper. So that's some of the things I've done to fix it. It's usually things like that. You know, it's, you know, bad electrical connections or not enough power. I alluded to that earlier. You know, you see these big brass locomotives, and they got a 2-amp tech 2, and guess what? They say, man, these things just don't run well. Yeah, well, it's kind of like feeding your chicken dirt and expecting it to grow. You know, it's just not going to happen.
Right, right.
That was probably a little bit of a Beverly Hillbillies thing, but, you know.
It works.
But it's true. I mean, you have to supply what it needs to make it do it. And so upgrading power packs, and now, you know, my gosh, they're so cheap. And you know, with the advent of the internet, and I should have talked about this earlier, you can build your own handheld throttles for, you know, $20 worth of parts, if that. You know, and a little bit of soldering skill, and you could put it together, put it in a nice box, and there's a ton of articles on the web on how to do that. So, now if you don't have the internet, you're not listening to me anyway.
That's right. All right, great. Now, I remember seeing things like flames or fears of fire. And so that goes to the question 9, what not to do, because I think you've seen some stuff, Uncle Larry.
Yeah, you heard me talk about my trip with the light bus down at my customer's layout. I've never done this. I typically try not to talk about what the other person's done wrong. I try to talk about what we can do to make it better.
Right.
You know? And if it's an out-and-out safety hazard, which I've only had one do, and it was a 3-rail layout, but the gentleman had taken 2 bell transformers at 3 amps each and wired them in parallel. With no fuse on the input, open wires out there that you, and it was in a place where you would reach under with your hands. I mean, it's amazing that no one got hit with 110 volts.
Right.
Absolutely stunning. When I crawled under there, the transformers had gotten so hot that it had turned the plywood almost black. It was so dark brown, it was almost black. And thank God they quit working.
Right.
Okay. I mean, he wired them in parallel. You never do that. Professional, you put a bigger transformer on. You don't wire two in parallel, ever. You just don't do it. So that led up to now we're using a much more safe method. We have circuit breakers in there to protect it and, you know, things like that. We're using a bigger, heavier transformer that's doing a stellar job without getting hot. And we've mounted it safely away, you know. One of the other things you can do is just simply, you know, if you've got those accessory outputs using AC and you got 100 bulbs on there, get a PC power supply, you know. But get rid of, if something is hot, you know, when you're operating, you got an issue. If you reach down and that bus wire is hot, you got an issue. You're drawing too much current somewhere. So there, you know, it's just following good practices. Don't save 25 cents on electronics. You will regret it forever.
Yep, that makes sense. Yeah, I for some reason that one event really stuck with me. I did.
I have, that's the only time I've ever done that. But I looked in and I said, this is so dangerous that I will not let you turn your layout on. And if necessary, I'll cut the power cord off and replace it. And he looked at me and he said, you're serious. I said, never been so serious in my life. This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. And I pulled it all out and showed it to him, and he said, wow. He said, and he had paid someone to do this for him, you know?
Right. Wow. Well, you know, with the Transformers thing, it kind of, to branch off a little bit nautically here, for instance, I know when it comes to, say, armor on a battleship, two thinner thicknesses are never as good as something that's just as thick as the two added up, but in one solid piece. And I'm guessing it's kind of like that way with a transformer. Yeah, you can have two that do a smaller thing, but it's not like two threes don't necessarily add up to a six. It's just more threes.
Technically they do, mm-hmm. but it's not a reliable six. And the problem is a voltage out of a transformer is never exactly the same. One might be 6.3 and one might be 5.7.
Okay.
They're still classified as sixes.
Right.
Okay. So they don't balance each other out well. And if you're going to do that, then you really need to put some kind of a diode or something in it to stop them from feeding back to from each other. You know what I mean? And it's you shouldn't do it.
Right.
You know, just simply shouldn't do it. I could give you the engineering on it, as could several of our friends, on how to make it work. But in the end, when you pin them down and say, would you do that? They say, oh, heck no. No, right. I'd never do that. In fact, you were on the call when I talked about it that night, and you could hear the collective groan.
Yes.
You
know? Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. All right.
The other thing is, yeah. You know, the other thing is safety first. Mm-hmm. If you've got an open connection of 110 volts of some sort, you know, like to a power pack or something, and it's not insulated, hey, just put some tape over it. Do something so that, you know, something doesn't accidentally fall on there. I mean,
yeah. And can I tell listeners, too, that 110 really hurts. I've gotten hit with that. I mean, yeah. You know, there's more dangerous than I've known people have taken bigger, but 110's enough. That really, really hurts.
Yeah, I was a witness to a 5 kV electrical shock on a fellow that went into his pinky finger and came out his elbow.
Wow.
And both had big, giant holes in them.
Yeah, see, yeah. With me, it was the mistake I made. Hang on. It's gonna sound like I'm blaming my kids, but I was the one to blame because I was the one who trusted them. I had to do some wiring in the attic, and I was wiring up a new light, and I just turned off the light switch, and I yelled down there,
nobody turn that switch on, okay? Or else it's going to really light me up. And I hear the old switch, okay, okay. So I grab one wire with the other hand, and one wire with the other hand, and then I hear, click. And boy, did I feel that. And of course, I yelled right away, and I heard the oldest one, are you trying to kill Daddy? And they were afraid they were going to get in trouble, and I was like, nope, that was my fault. I did it the lazy way. I could have turned off the breaker, and I didn't. So, yeah, 110 can do that. That can sting a bit. So
it hurts.
Yeah, it'll wake you up, and it can burn. And more importantly, as you were seeing from the plywood, it's definitely enough where over time it can cause something to catch on fire.
Yeah, I mean, if like I said earlier, if there's something hot, find out why.
Yeah,
there's a reason. And now some of the old Lionel transformers, you had a 2026 and big old 43, 44 or whatever diesel running at the same time. Yeah, they got warm, you know that. But typically, if you put large enough feeders on them, guess what? They didn't get as warm.
Right.
You
know? Right.
And if you feel a wire and it's hot, stop immediately. Turn the power off.
Right.
You've got a big problem.
Right.
You know.
No, that makes sense. All right. So let's go to question. Do you want to do 10 or do you want to do that listener question that I happened to paste on there last
time? I want to do the listener
question. Yeah. Now, this is also from my good friend Rick, who's doing the PR cell in Millville Branch, and he's doing it in N scale. And he has so many engines. It's just not practical right now for him to try to go DCC. I mean, he has a lot. I mean, if he hasn't hit over 100, he's close. So it's just for him, it's just too much right now. And so what he wrote in saying was, and I've seen this happen because I've operated on his railroad a couple times. So he has separate power packs on each of two sections, and when an engine crosses the gap between the sections, all engines on all sections of track do a big surge in speed until the gap crosser is through.
Yeah, I've got a couple of answers for this.
Yeah.
And I need to qualify them. You should have blocks set up so that when you enter a block, that power pack follows you into the next block. There's a couple of things that can cause this. To be exact, you would have to have exactly the same voltage on both tracks, okay, when it crosses. So it is possible, because you don't have really a common rail, you know what I mean?
Right.
That you're doubling the voltage. It is possible. And if somebody doesn't have the power pack with the direction switch in the right direction on the next one you're going into, then bad things could really happen.
Well, this is usually, and this is to give you a little more background. Basically, what happens is he has his Pavonia yard. He's got that on different throttles, and basically the Pavonia yard guy manages one section of the railroad and puts together the trains or sends a through train through. So there's one, basically about a third of the railroad that's on the yardmaster's power pack, and so the yardmaster's basically sending it out onto the main line where the guy with the other power pack is picking it up. And that's
okay. So when he comes out of that yard and crosses that gap, that's but everything increases in speed, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, and my suspicion is it's because the two power packs are relieving current enough. In other words, they're supplying more current to the whole thing, or he's got some kind of a mismatch in the voltage between the two of them.
Okay.
And I'd almost have to get my hands on it to answer it 100%,
right.
But if there's any way at all, he could have an independent track that on a double pull, double throw switch that goes between the two throttles, that's the way he should handle it.
Okay.
That would be the easiest, quickest fix to do it in that case.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Good. Well, he's never afraid to say it like it is. So
and have him call me.
Yeah.
Okay. And because I'd like him to take some voltage measurements across it to see exactly what the voltage is across the rails at the joint, you know, and that would tell me a little bit more.
Okay, awesome. Well, I'm sure he would be thrilled. So great, awesome. Well, good. And then let's go on and hang on.
Why haven't we done number 10 yet?
That's a good question. I think we ought to do that. I think we ought to do that. So, 10.
You know, we didn't give away the numbers on 1, 2, 3, or 4, but you know, it's okay. We're growing.
Yeah, exactly, we are. You know, I think Ryan used to, when he did it, he would actually put in the show notes. He would just put the whole.
Yeah, he put all the questionnaires in.
Yeah, I'm not nearly as articulate. He was such a web guru. He could figure all that stuff out. And Tom Barbalay has helped me through a lot of it. But then there's just some of it where I just got to kind of go with the flow. So, 10.
Well, can I float something here?
You always.
I want to float this to the Model Railcast listeners and see if you guys are interested. But you know how we have the people in Walmart? I'm thinking about doing a quick podcast, maybe once every month, couple months, on the people of train shows, big vendors, small vendors, the guys that might want to get on that are starting in the business and want to start doing train shows.
Yeah.
And I think if I didn't do it on my own, I would love it to be part of an Model Railcast thing. And I know you and I both know a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
We could get them on and maybe just take a little sideline on it.
I know? Like it. Like an MRCS and, supplemental or just another fast.
Yeah, let program. The team, let the guys out there, give us some feedback on the show notes.
Yeah.
On what you think about it. I mean, I could host it or you and I could host it or something, you know, but
yeah, that's.
I'm just kind of floating the idea.
Well, it's you know, that's kind of like what Ryan envisioned anyway. He never envisioned it as just the Ryan show. I mean, he liked it when other people would come on. And I know we had a guy used to do branch lines for us every once in a while. And I like that idea. So, yeah, Model Broadcasters, let us know via Facebook page or private message on what you guys think of that. Definitely.
Yeah, and if you don't like it, we don't want to hear it.
Yeah, just keep it to yourselves.
No, I'm kidding. We really want to know what you think.
For sure. So,
sorry I threw you that curveball to you, but I figured it was a good place to do it before we got to 10.
Absolutely. Although I am kind of a sloppy hitter.
We're going to use the A word.
Yeah, it's true. are we though?
Did you record that?
I'm probably dead. That's okay. They need to know that we're human. So 10 more ways to get most out of DC. I know there's, you know, we discussed it a little bit offline, but there's new technology apart from DCC that can greatly improve DC. And offhand, I was thinking about what you mentioned about Arduinos and stuff, but what's really out there? I mean, that really can take this to the next level.
Well, I think it's more about animation and sound, mm-hmm. You know, the first thing you do to your DC layout is just make sure your equipment's up to spec with clean wheels, et cetera, and all that. And that's an enhancement in itself. The newer technology out there, you can actually take a DCC locomotive with sound and put it on a DC layout and run it. So that's a big enhancement. And it runs with the sound. Now, the voltage has got to be a little high and they're a little finicky, but, you know, it can be done. So, but the other enhancements are things like servos for the switch machines. Now everybody equates that to DCC because you have these little DCC servo boards. But in December 2016, Dr. Jeff Bunza, a friend of mine, via Model Railroad Hobbyist, came out with some really great Arduino-based servo driver boards that run just on 5 volts DC.
Wow.
And you can use push buttons to take the servos back and forth and use a little laptop to program the Arduino to change the throw length, etc. You know, so you could get rid of your twin coils and not have to crawl under your layout. You know, as you get older like I am, it's getting harder and harder to justify me putting a tortoise in anything, you know. But you can take the 3.7-gram servos, which are the size of a postage stamp and about 3/8 of an inch thick, and you can bury it in your homosote and just drill a hole for the cable to go back to the Arduino, and bang, it works. If you want, you know, if you have thoughts about upgrading to DCC, Jeff had on his blog on Model Railroad Hobbyist had an Arduino interface that works with DCC that still uses the push buttons. So you can still do it that way, but later on, you could add the DCC functionality to it. Couple other things. Arduino for lighting. He's got circuits out there that do crazy, amazing stuff. He has a 3 LED. I think it's a white, a red, and a blue. And it And it goes on, the Arduino flips them on in such a fast rate that it actually, if you put it in a building, it looks like there's a television in the living room.
Oh, that's wicked cool.
Yeah, and I mean, all these things don't require DCC. They might require a little soldering skills, but the code is already written. You don't even have to do anything except read a couple, watch a couple of YouTube videos on how to upload to an Arduino, and you're working, you know? So if you say, well, I'm, you know, 103 years old, I can't do that. But, you know, I don't want to hear it. I'm 61 and I'm learning all the time. And, you know, they called me Arduino boy for a while because, I mean, I went hog wild after Jim Scores of NCE fame gave me a hard time about it. But, you know, I mean, servos, the Arduinos for lighting, simple things like there's, and I'm going to put a shameless plug in for another friend of mine who's a small website. It's LED-switch, SWITCH.com. He sells blinking LEDs in various sizes and colors. So all you'd have to do is if you have a water tower that had a bulb in it and, you know, and the bulb burns out, for a dollar, you can put a nice LED in there and it's going to last 100 years. You know, not really. Not typically 28 is 100,000 hours, you know, of average time.
Wow. So, no, that's
so, and they're a dollar.
Right.
You know what I mean? It used to be you had to buy those $20 circuits to get something to work like that. Now you go out and buy the flashing LED. Here's another one. Got a little campfire circuit. Got your hobos laying around, you know, eating, you know, stew and all that.
Slumgullion and glass of Sterno.
They've stole your scotch and, you know, on your, but you got a campfire, right? You want a little campfire circuit? Go to the Dollar Store. Dollar Tree sells a package of two of the little Votif electric lights that flicker. Guess what? It's a 1.5-volt battery and an LED and a little switch. That's it. It doesn't even need a resistor. But if you want to hook it up to your DC supply and just put the 1K resistor in series with it and hook it up and it'll work.
Wow.
You know? And you can actually hook it straight to AC too, believe it or not. But I mean, there's an enhancement for your fire. And if you get some Tamiya clear red or clear green, believe it or not, paint, and you paint the little stripes on it, it makes different colors shine through as it's flashing, you know. So
that is really cool, actually.
And, you know, and you don't have to be a high-tech millionaire to do this stuff.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And shameless plug for me, but there are several other companies out there but we sell sound modules. You can hook it to the accessory output of your power pack. I've got about 35 different sounds that are typically 10 to 15 minutes on a loop. A lot of them are shorter and they're lower quality recordings because they did them on a lower quality thing. But mine are high quality encoded live recordings. So when you hear a cow, it's a real cow. It's not a synthesized cow. Okay.
Nice.
It's not. And so, but, and there are guys out there that are doing the same things. There's the Dream System, which is pretty incredible. It's a lot more high dollar.
Right.
But
right.
Adding sound or movement. Okay. Here's another thing I'll put out there. I bought some small motors off eBay from China. They're 4 RPMs. So guess what we did? We have a car dealer that has a rotating car on the roof. We took some LEDs, some regular 5mm LEDs, and put them in styrene and made a little light holder, put a light holder so there's 3 spotlights on the car as it goes around in a circle.
Okay,
simple project.
Really
done in
cool.
Night.
Wow.
All DC, no DCC, none of this. I mean, and if you can't, you know, the hardest part you have out of all this is making sure the voltages are right. But even that, there's little inexpensive voltage regulators on eBay that, you know, you can dial, and they're $2. And I actually use one for my power packs and put a bridge rectifier on the front. So AC or DC, 6.5 to 32 volts runs my sound modules. I don't care what it is. And, you know, so all that can be done. The quality in mine is in the sound, not necessarily the hardware. The hardware is good, and it's actually, I'd say, very good. But it's the quality of the sound that on the front end and the speaker on the back end that make the difference.
There it is.
So, I mean, and there's other things I could spend hours on. Like, there's an Arduino sensor that actually Jeff Bunza developed a solid state version of it. Okay, it just, if you don't want to get into the Arduino programming, it's on Model Railroad Hobbyist. You can just search on Bunza, B-U-N-Z-A, and you'll look at his blog. And this thing is, you can order the board. He gives you a full parts list. It's like 7 components, and you hook up two little sensors, and it's got an ambient light sensor. This was always the problem with sensors, is you had to have a certain amount of light in the room or they didn't work. Things went on when you didn't want them to and all this. Well, with this ambient light sensor, it has a reference LED. So it's measuring the ambient light in the room, and the sensor between the track, when it gets covered, automatically makes it.
That's really cool.
Crazy thing is, you can get the room to almost to where you're stubbing your toe dark, you know? and it still works. And if you really wanted it to work completely in the dark, you can get a UV transmitter for $1, wire it in, and just have it blast UV down over that section, and it'll work in almost complete darkness, which, you know, that's a technical term for Bernie. Sorry, Bernie, I know it's not complete darkness, but, you know.
Oh, fantastic. Well, before we let you go, you have your own business there, and what's it called? Where can they find it? And how can our listeners best get a hold of you if they got a question?
I have a website. It's the name of my company is Creaky Chair Models, C-R-E-A-K-Y, chair as in what you sit on, and models, LLC. It's a limited liability corporation. You can reach me at creakychairmodels.com. My website has a link to my actual phone number, which I answer. Okay, I don't let them go to voicemail. I actually answer them. I have not put up – part of my problem with an online store is I just hate having people's data float around. Mm-hmm. So I will take – my products are out there. You can kind of look at them, and I've got enough YouTube videos to see – to show you some of the things that I've done. But you can reach me at creakychairmodels@gmail.com, at creakychairmodels.com, or you can call me on my cell phone, which is on the website. I'm not going to put it out here. I want you to look at the website. And it's right at the bottom of the first page. So, but the one thing I'm can I give a plug?
Please do.
Today's business acumen is about giving the customer what they want. And I had a stereo sound module, which in the past I was telling everybody, just get a cheap set of PC speakers and plug it in, and you can have a sound on each side. So I had a customer say, I don't want to deal with trying to mount these PC speakers. Can you amplify it any? And it comes with a 2-watt mono output. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I went shopping around, and I found a 3.5-watt stereo chip that I'm now putting on that module, and you can put a pair of iPhone speakers under a building, or I have some heavier speakers, and there's no difference in the price. They all cost me about the same.
Right.
But I have a set of deep bass speakers that I found a vendor for that I wire in if you really want that little bit extra fidelity. And that product is in beta right now. In fact, it's playing in the other room. It's on a 24-hour burn-in, and I'll be releasing that probably within the next couple weeks.
Oh, very cool.
And typically how I do it is, if you call me and say you want it, I'll ask you to PayPal me 50%. I'll ship it out within 2 weeks, and then when you receive it and you're happy with it, you can pay the invoice that's in there.
Great.
I don't think there's very many people that do that.
Oh, that's great. That's really
smart. I have yet to have anybody refuse payment. And I got about 65 or 70 that I know of out there. I probably have done well over 150, but, you know, I gave a bunch away in the beginning because I wasn't in business yet.
Right.
So
very cool.
I think you have one coming, as I recall.
Yes, you have said
it's
so.
Part of the bribe. It's part of the bribe. I was waiting for the stereo module, just to be honest.
Oh, fantastic. Well,
I may send one to Maggie just so she has her own MP3 player.
Well, see, she would dig that. Well, always a pleasure to have you on the Model Railcast show. Looking forward to having you on again much, much sooner than the last stretch that we did. Although, if you look in the show's chronological order, it wasn't that long ago. But it's
it was only 150 shows. No, it was probably, no, what? I don't think it was that long. I think I've done one.
Yeah, no, we had you. You were on it once it went over 200. Let me see. Yeah, I know I had you on sooner than that, but the problem is that we've gone many, many years with just since Ryan passed away, we've done only, on average, about 5 or 6 shows a year. We're trying to bump that up a bit.
Well, that's what maybe, you know, if the listeners see value in it, maybe then, you know, I could take on that little sub one and you could just release them as shows once you're happy with them.
Yeah, see, that sounds like a great idea to me. So,
and that way we can give the guys another content and they don't have to go to 3 different places to get it because it's not about me.
Okay.
Really not.
Oh,
really
I not. Hear you.
I mean, there are guys like you and I know Denny.
Yes.
And you know, he's a great guy and a wealth of knowledge. I mean, we probably spend 3 hours with him and never learn everything he knows about train shows.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So.
Great. Well, listen, thank you so much for giving us your time tonight, and you have a great time at the train show tomorrow.
Well, the good news is he told me he's not picking me up until 5:15, so I get an extra 15 minutes of sleep.
Nice. Well, good.
And just to bust on my buddy here, it's officially 10:25 Eastern time right now.
Oh,
so
there you go.
And things I do for my friend Tim, because we share the same birthday.
We do, and that goes a long way.
and when I see him next time, he's going to share the scotch.
That's right. I've got to make sure I don't empty this whole thing to themselves.
Oh, well, no, that's all right. I'm pretty sure we could find another one.
All right, my friend. I will say goodbye to you, and then I'll talk for you a second after I close it out.
Thanks, guys, for letting me prattle on.
And, of course, what we open the show with, we close the show with. The Model Railcast theme. Until next time, guys.
You've been listening to the Model Railcast Show. You can find us at www.modelrailcastshow.com or on Facebook at Friends of MRCS and look for us on iTunes. Don't miss your other great model railroading podcasts out there, The Scotty Mason Show, Model Rail Radio, A Modeler's Life, and the Model Railroad Hobbyist Podcast. And drop us a line if we miss mentioning you. This is Amy Perkins for the Model Railcast Show. Have a great week.